Welcome to another Innovation Forum podcast with Ian Welsh. Joining me today is Senior Associate with Innovation Forum, Dr. Peter Stanbury. Welcome back to the podcast, Peter.
Hello, Ian. As ever, lovely to talk to you.
Peter, you've been leading a research group designed to drill down into the challenges for smallholder farmers and their communities and looking for some business-led solutions. Can you outline some of the reasons the group was set up, who's involved in the group, and what questions in particular that you're investigating?
The research group emerged from the Landscapes Conference last autumn, when it was apparent that the sort of approach to dealing with smallholder farmers, which worked on the basis of certification and standards, had slightly sort of run into the sand, still relevant, but more was needed, and that we needed to see smallholder farmer supply chains more in context. And various conversations we had with a number of organisations afterwards led us to realise that there were sort of two areas that needed to be addressed. The first is to try and take learnings from across different supply chains. What tends to happen at the moment is palm people talk to palm people, cocoa people talk to cocoa people, and never the twain shall meet. So what we were trying to do is to share learnings between different supply chains. And then the second aspect is to see those farmers more in their context, to try and understand the sort of social, political, economic dynamics, the context in which those farmer supply chains operate. And that's what we're doing. We have six member organisations on board. I'm always going to forget one. So Nestle, Cotton Connect, Golden Agri, the Clinton Development Initiative, Curly ACP, and the German government, GIZ. See, I remembered them. That's quite good going. Those organisations cover a wide range of supply chains. They are different types of organisations. What we've been doing is a series of interviews with key people from within each of those organisations. I think I've done sort of 60 or so interviews so far, and also a fairly significant literature review. And the idea is to come up with some really clear recommendations for what does best practice look like. So rather than it just being derived from one or other supply chain, from all supply chains or many and very different types of organisations.
What are the challenges that have stood out for you?
I think when we started, we assumed that effectively the argument we were saying is that there's a jigsaw puzzle and everyone's got different bits of the jigsaw. And the picture on that jigsaw puzzle is a bunch of smallholder farmers. I think what's become really clear is that actually we know quite a lot about smallholder farmers and what the challenges are in relation to them and what works in addressing those challenges. There's quite a high degree of commonality across different supply chains. What is missing is insight into what happens thereafter, what happens further downstream in the supply chain. So what, for example, happens between farm gate and the dock? There's an awful lot of opacity around that. Then you get into issues of, it's all very well for companies to make commitments around carbon emissions or sustainability, but the implications that that has for the way in which not just part of an organization works, but the whole company. And also issues to do with engagement with government, both at origin country level, but also internationally. So the key thing that stood out so far is when it comes to farmers themselves, we know quite a lot. It's the rest of that big equation that we know much, much less about.
Anything that's taken you by surprise?
The scale of the challenge in a number of areas. First of all, just sheer scale. There are something like an estimated 570 million smallholder farmers in the world. And whilst sustainability projects have reached a large number of farmers, what's going on so far is really a drop in the ocean. And so a real challenge is, how do we bring all of this to scale? Secondly, another issue is where you've got some real lacunas, some real gaps in understanding what goes on. So for example, take the discussion last year about the living income differential in the cocoa market in Ghana and Cote d'Ivoire. When you actually start to dig down into that, you realize that's a highly problematic issue, almost certainly won't address the issue, and could itself cause a number of other challenges. But then, I suppose, thirdly, there's the whole question around, how do we do supply chains? How consistent are commodity spot markets and long international supply chains with sustainability? If you've got one cocoa bean that has been produced sustainably and another that hasn't, do commodity markets value those exactly the same thing? That's an inconsistency which will need to be addressed. I realise that's a significant and global challenge. But if what we're trying to do is to develop durable smallholder supply chains, these are some of the questions that we are going to need to answer.
Do you have any early conclusions that you can share? And I know you're midway through the process, but what are the conclusions that are emerging from the research?
Well, we've talked a lot, or we've written in Innovation Forum quite a lot about what we've called collaborative development governance, the idea that there's a need for much more collaboration between different sorts of organisations. And I think what we're beginning to see through the research is some really concrete illustrations of how that might work. So if you take even at a reasonably local level with a supply chain, at the moment, you could well have two or three different company sustainability projects working with the same group of farmers. You know, one might be working with them on, I don't know, horticulture, another might be working with them on coffee, but those don't join up. you may well have government extension workers who are also seeking to work with those farmers. They're not joined up. You might have development projects run by international agencies like, you know, the World Bank, GIZ, working with the farmers or a similar group of farmers. That's not all joined up. So even at that local level, you don't get a join up between what goes on. So at the very least, that's a waste of resource. At the worst, it may well mean that you're confusing farmers. Even at that very, very basic level, collaboration to come up with a shared view of what the problem is and what are we going to do about it, I think is very important. That's just at that local level. I think also if you then go to the country level of origin countries, I think there are key issues around how to support those governments in properly resourcing their agricultural interventions. Quite a lot of the people I've interviewed have said that many of the developing countries they work with have set regulation, but with absolutely no ability to be able to deliver on that. Companies slightly find themselves in the position of having to find themselves doing what the government itself should be doing. So how can we join up that? How can we join up perhaps international development assistance to work with some of these countries to help improve what they do in relation to their farmers? What we want to try and do, we're publishing an interim report in the next month. And I think what we'll want to try and do is to draw out some really concrete examples of what that might need to look like at different stages of the supply chain process.
What examples then of this regulation without implementation problem do you think are the most important? You know, this has been around for some time, and it's obviously concerning that it feels that it's still at, you know, a very early stage. So what examples can you share of the, you know, regulation without implementation problem?
Well, I mean, an obvious one is not sufficiently resourcing extension workers. You know, I've myself been in the situation where I was working on a development project, and we were driving, this was in Tanzania, we were driving up into the fields, and the government extension workers hopped a lift in our car because they didn't have transport. And that's not an unusual situation. Various people I've interviewed have told similar stories that you don't have, in many countries, properly resourced extension workers. So theoretically, these are the people who are supposed to be mandated by the government to work with smallholder farmers, but they don't have the resource to do so. So that even at that very basic level, you've got a big gap between what governments say they want to do and what they do. In other places, there's also examples of where governments want farmers to come together into cooperatives, but don't provide any sort of structured regulatory framework to make that happen. Organizations helping farmers form cooperatives and the cooperatives themselves find themselves slightly sort of wallowing in an unclear legal situation.
How do you think the company-farm relationship is going to change then? And is there a role of technology? Technology is seen so much as the solution to all ills, but how do you see technology really impacting the company-farmer relationship?
I'll start with the company-farmer relationship bit first and then come to the tech bit. It's difficult to escape the conclusion that if commitments being made to sustainability are genuine and are to be delivered, that company-farmer relationship needs to change fundamentally. At the moment, there really isn't a company-farmer relationship in most cases. You have companies buy largely on spot markets, and fine, many companies now have projects working with farmers, but the relationship between farmers and companies is very remote. There may be very many intermediaries in the chain between the company and the farmer. And what that tends to mean is that farmers don't have visibility what they're going to be selling next season. They're poor anyway, so can't really invest. They can't afford for a crop to fail or afford for a crop to not be sold. Examples where that relationship has become closer demonstrate how co-investment by companies with farmers into new equipment, new technologies, new crops, new seed types, and so on. That is a fundamental game changer in terms of how these farmers can operate. If those commitments are to be made to work, then that relationship has to become much, much closer. Interestingly, when it comes to technology, I think it has a role. I'm not sure that it is, in any sense, a magic bullet. I mean, a number of the conversations I've had said that sometimes technology gives the impression of there being a clear answer when actually things are much more complicated. And I think one of the things that we're trying to do with this project is to bring in sort of more of a social science approach, you know, political economy, development economics. And I think understanding some of those societal challenges are at least as important as what technology can do. I'm not saying that technology doesn't have a role, but I think it needs to be balanced alongside building genuine relationships on a human basis with these farmers. Technology can be an adjunct to that, but I don't see it as an answer in itself.
What do you think are going to be the kind of emerging challenges for smallholder and smallholder communities looking forwards?
The obvious challenge is just making the numbers add up. I was very struck by one interviewee who said, we've worked and worked with many of our smallholder farmers to eke out every bit of increased profitability and productivity we can, but it's still not enough. Of the 570 million or so smallholder farmers around the world, about 450 million of them farm on less than 2 hectares. And that unit size is likely to get smaller as populations grow, land gets divided up between the children of the family. It's difficult to see how that model can be sustained. How we shift to something of a more rounded rural agricultural economy is obviously a huge question because it begs a whole bunch of challenges around land tenure, social structures, migration to cities, all of those sorts of things. But it's difficult to see how that can be avoided simply because of the scale of the challenge and how that situation is going to develop as an inevitable consequence of population growth. So I think there's some fairly fundamental challenges which are a lot more complicated and will require a lot more thought and collaboration. However great what's happened so far is, there's several gears that we've got to go up through. This is not just a technocratic question of helping farmers select better seedlings or seeds. It's not just a technocratic question of helping them improve their farming techniques. All of that's very important. There's a need to go much, much further if genuinely we are to get sustainable, durable, smallholder commodity supply chains.
Well, thanks, Peter. It's clear that, as ever, there's still a long way to go. And it's a bit like the proverbial onion. The moment you unpick the, unpeel it, and there's always more challenges underneath. Thanks very much for sharing some of your insights from your research. Dr. Peter Sanbury, a pleasure as ever.
Ian, as ever, a pleasure to talk to you.